Hi, I'm Dan Barber from Blue Hill and Blue Hill at Stone Barns. You are listening to Food Fridays on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Invasive species are non-native plants and animals whose introduction to an ecosystem causes environmental or economic damage or harm to human health. Locally, some of those invasive species have included zebra mussels, Asian shore crabs, European starlings, the Asian longhorn beetle, and garlic mustard. And controlling these new species often turns out to be a very difficult task. But Bun Lai, the James Beard-nominated chef at Mia Sushi in New Haven, Connecticut, has a suggestion. Eat them. And he joins us now to talk about cooking with invasive species. Hello, welcome to our show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
You say that an important goal of a restaurant is to use what you have available where you live. Has that been traditionally true of sushi?
It's been true of every cuisine that there is. It's just not true today. So sushi is just a representation of our whole food system, which has just become incredibly internationalist.
And nowadays we hear of Japanese suppliers buying up the best tuna that's been caught in the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah, my mother's Japanese. She's from southern Japan and lived by the ocean. And when she was a kid, they ate a lot of seafood. And all the seafood that she ate was fished right out of her backyard. And it wasn't any different for people who grew up during her era right here in New Haven, Connecticut, where I live right now.
Isn't your mother a nutritionist? When she opened the restaurant in 1982, was using invasive species part of the plan?
It was never something that we even really knew about. Back in those days, what we did was my mom used to have her own garden. And what she used to do was go foraging all the time. So many of the weeds that we consider, many of the food that we used to forage that people here consider to be weeds were plants that were food when she was when she was growing up in Japan.
And we're seeing a revival of that as foraging is coming back here and pretty much all over the world, I guess inspired to some degree by Noma and the influence of that Danish restaurant. But what led you to become an environmental activist along with your duties as a chef?
Well, I grew up in the restaurant business. My mom started me as 31 years ago. I always grew up very aware of nutrition because of my mom being a nutritionist and my brother and I growing up as athletes. And then my father did research at Yale, and I always knew that I wanted to do something that was able to make an impact like my father was doing with his research. And my mother was through her work in nutrition, so I'm actually not doing anything that's really different than the way that I was raised. And, you know, doing the kind of sushi that we're doing, using ingredients that are close by or using invasive species that are species that are abundantly available, often highly nutritious and tasty at the same time, really goes with the way that sushi first began as a cuisine of catching fish along the Mekong River and pressing it in rice.
Now, invasive species aren't just newly introduced non-native plants and animals. Why do they so often tend to disrupt the environment and thrive at the expense of other plants and wildlife?
And, yeah, and you're also describing the way human beings are in the world as well, you know, very disruptive and often destructive. And you're also describing the way our farming system often has been, you know, as far as the industrial farming system. So rather than taking an approach to using ingredients that are destructive to the environment and destructive to the ecosystem that humans depend on, the conversation with using an invasive species as well, if you were to pluck out an invasive species that's being damaging of a specific environment, could you or can we help restore or rejuvenate or harmonize that that habitat.
Well, the invasive species throw off the balance of an environment?
It can. I just had a phone call from a fisherman in Maine, and they've got an explosion of European green crabs, an invasive species that came over in the 1800s on the ballast of ships. Around where I am, this part of Long Island Sound, green crabs aren't a problem because the invasive Asian shore crab has crowded them out. But in Maine, the green crab is problematic to the shellfishing industry there. So what we were talking about is trying to create a market, some sort of interest in eating the green crab. The big challenge is that some of the biggest prejudices that we carry as human beings is a visceral one, you know, the reaction that we have to eating something different.
Well, would the green crabs be considered good to eat in their natural habitat or any of these invasive species?
The green crab and the Asian shore crab are both eaten in other places around the world. The Asian shore crab is prized in Asia, you know, ground up in Thailand to make like crab sauce, and so is the invasive green crab as well. So it's just over here that we're not eating it. You know, Americans tend to like seafood that comes out in clumps. They don't like to pick at their seafood. They don't want to have fish where there's bones. You know, they like fillets or they like big steaks. So it's really about re-educating and re-inspiring the public to appreciate different ways of eating.
And Americans don't like insects either, but you used cicadas as an ingredient during this recent invasion.
Mm-hmm. It's not I'm not doing anything that's new or special. It's three-quarters of the world, you know, Africa and Asians depend on insects. The science, the nutritional science behind it is that the most nutritious insects, such as specific grubs, are more nutritiously dense than any sort of seafood that you can get, and certainly any livestock.
Because they're just pure protein.
Not just pure protein, but full of omega-3 fatty acids as well, because these insects are often eating grasses, you know, and if you're eating, like, say, a chicken or a cow, it's not eating grass. You know, it's eating corn, so it's high in omega-6 fatty acid, which is implicated for heart disease. And that's the same with a lot of fish that we eat, like tilapia and farmed salmon as well. So when the American Heart Association says eat fish, it's good for your heart, or eat salmon, it's good for your heart, they should be much more specific to say, hey, actually eat wild salmon or eat wild tilapia. You know, that farmed fish does not have the benefits of, say, eating a grub.
My guest is Bun Lai, who is the James Beard-nominated chef at Mia's Sushi in New Haven, Connecticut, and he's been cooking with invasive species. Can you tell us about the stalked tunicate, also known as the Asian sea squirt? The name makes it sound less than delectable.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely a challenging ingredient to use. They look like they grow all over the place. They attach themselves to the bottom of boats, to docks.
They're like barnacles.
They look like barnacles. They look like. They're not something that's going to be an overnight hit as far as food, because the texture is like, it's called a sea squirt because when you hold it in your hand and you squeeze it, it squirts out out of its top end, which kind of looks like a penis, to tell you the truth.
And do people eat it in other parts of the world?
They're beloved in Korea, and Koreans see them as a aphrodisiac as well.
Well, I understand the aphrodisiac part from what you just said.
Yeah, it hasn't worked for me, but.
But it, is it something you find it tasty?
Yeah, but I do. But I say that with hesitation because I had to try it a lot before I started liking it.
Mm-hmm. You have to find out what to cook it with. I imagine what other ingredients.
I liked it most when it was raw with a squeeze of lime. You know, just kind of cut in half and scraped out, you know, where there's like this delicate yellow roe-like substance, which is its innards.
Now,
but the average person is not going to really like that.
You know, what about feral hogs, which have been a problem in many states, though not in New York and Connecticut? Are they hunted? Do they taste like pork or wild boar?
I'm sorry, what did you ask me?
Feral hogs.
Yeah. Yeah, feral hogs are fantastic. They're leaner. They're delicious. It's a lean meat. It's fairly readily available. It costs obviously much more than regular pork, but you can buy it on the internet, you know, from a lot of different sources. It's not the pork that you necessarily expect to be eating. It's definitely gamier, but then you're talking about a type of animal that doesn't have the antibiotics, which is so problematic in our animal food system today, and other added chemicals that we can now expect from the livestock that we get. Plus, since they're so incredibly destructive, you're helping get rid of them from the habitats that they're destroying.
And then there are other things that are destructive, like Asian carp. Is there a market for that?
Yeah. Asian carp has more omega-3 fatty acid than farm salmon. Smoked Asian carp tastes every bit as good or better than any salmon that I've ever had.
And are people fishing them in the Great Lakes where they've been so destructive?
The Americans have a hard time and historically have a hard time in eating carp, which is kind of interesting because so many Americans come from European and Eastern European stock, and Eastern Europeans eat lots and lots of carp.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, any carp that you eat and see in the United States in any pond is not indigenous to the United States. It's an invasive species brought by our government so that fishermen would fish them and eat them when we were actually at a time when we were overfishing our streams and lakes. But the result was that Americans didn't want to fish carp, and we see them more as large, dirty goldfish.
And Americans don't generally like to eat something like jellyfish. Yesterday we talked about the exploding population of jellyfish mm-hmm. around the world. Jellyfish is found in a lot of Asian cuisines, isn't it?
It is, and it's definitely one of my favorite foods. Like you said, it's incredibly problematic as well.
You put it into a dish you call peanut butter and jelly?
It's a twist on a recipe that my mom used to make us when we were little, so nothing incredibly original, but I added peanut butter to it and rabbit meat.
And jellyfish,
and contrasting textures. And jellyfish doesn't taste like much. It's all about the texture. So you really need to add something. You always need a fat, and that's where the peanut butter comes in. And I don't know. It's when we have it, it's very, very popular.
Now, lionfish are not only invasive but also poisonous. How do you cook something that's poisonous?
Very, very easily. You have to be careful when you're filleting it to not get pricked by it. You know, the problem is more when you're actually catching it. You know, you don't want to go out and grab it. But lionfish is a fish that has tremendous potential in the world of sushi, and for some reason is not used yet. Because, as you know, fugu, the poisonous pufferfish, is legendary in the cuisine of sushi.
Mm-hmm.
And
although you have to cut it very carefully, otherwise you have a dead customer.
I think that's what makes it so incredibly popular, right? The intrigue and the danger. And lionfish has that as well, except lionfish can't kill you like fugu can. So
can it make you high the way fugu can?
I don't know. Maybe next time we can go diving together and just
So is that how you're finding most of these things, by diving for them yourself? Is there a market? Is there a Cisco Foods supplier that that deals in invasive species?
Yeah, maybe one day. I mean, when you know people like yourself get the word out about eating, you know, types of foods and flora and fauna that are abundant, that are underutilized, you know, and the chefs start seeking out more exotic ingredients.
And you're doing this in your restaurant in New Haven. Have you heard of other people also starting to cook with these species?
Yeah, people are doing it all around the world. And if not necessarily in restaurants, you know, people who live by the sea or by the woods know what to pick and eat, you know. I think a lot of that information is just lost these days because of the urbanization of human beings. You know, I think we're obviously very disconnected from the time when we're so close to nature, and at a time when we knew that our food ingredients were once living things.
Well, it's interested enough people so that Scientific American had you do an article about what you do with invasive species, and a number of these things are tempting me, although I'm not sure I know where to get kudzu on the open market.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of foraging classes out all over the place. That's definitely a really good start for people to just go out and take those and to understand that not only can they help the habitat out, but they can help their bodies out, because if you learn to forage and you go especially for invasive species that are problematic, like, for instance, the garlic mustard, you know, lets out a compound in the soil so that other plants can't compete with it, you know, the same way that pine trees do. Mm-hmm. So nothing grows around pine trees. But if people were to eat more garlic mustard, for instance, you're talking about a plant that's exponentially more nutrient-rich, you know, with phytochemicals and minerals, depending on the soil that it's from, than any organic farm-raised vegetable that you can possibly get. So. And it's also fun. It's just, you know, half the reason why I go out is because I love to be out, you know. And I love to be outside especially, and I love to be in the water. So,
Bun Lai's article on how and why to eat invasive species is in the September issue, the last issue of Scientific American, the food issue. You can also eat some of these foods at his restaurant in New Haven, Connecticut, Mia's Sushi. And I thank you so much for being on our show today.
Well, thank you for having me. And, yeah, I really urge everyone to get that copy of Scientific American because it's a real special issue.
It has truths about GMOs, talks about calories and barbecue and all sorts of other things. Thanks again.
Thank you.